Welcome back to Midday on WNYC. I'm Jonathan Capehart. During the spring of 1968 in Memphis, Tennessee, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. led 1,300 African-American sanitation workers in protest. They were fighting against a history of neglect and unfair wages, and this would be the last march of Dr. King's life as he was assassinated a few days later in that same city. With the 50th anniversary of the Memphis sanitation strike approaching, Smithsonian Magazine contributor Ted Conover traveled to Memphis to see what has changed since the protest and what hasn't. His piece, "The Strike That Brought MLK to Memphis," or "I Am a Man" in the magazine, can be found in Smithsonian Magazine. And Ted Conover, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for being here. Let's go right to the beginning. What was the Memphis sanitation strike? Why did this strike happen?
It happened because of years of abuse, basically. A group of workers, almost entirely African-American, who reported to work faithfully every day, but were treated like casual laborers. If it was a rainy day, they were sent home without pay. Regardless, they were paid very, very little. 50 years ago, it was just over a dollar a day for many of them. Many had migrated from Memphis looking for, from Mississippi, often from sharecropper farms looking for work in the city. And this is what they found. It may have been marginally better than what they had back home, but not by a lot. And there had been talk of strike for actually months and years before this finally happened, and I think the reason it finally happened in 1968 is that the mayor, who had just been elected, he was a white guy, Yale graduate, overturned the decision of the city council to give the sanitation workers a little more money. He said no, and I think there was just such widespread outrage that the workers finally got the support of the clergy, which is a crucial constituency in Memphis, and others in the middle class, and started their strike.
So then how did Martin Luther King hear about the protests?
So a local preacher named James Lawson was a friend of King and got involved in the strike, and when he saw that it had momentum, he called King and asked if he would stop in Memphis in the middle of his Poor People's Campaign that he was involved with. I guess it took a little arm twisting. King had a lot on his plate. He was very much in demand. I don't think this had been on his radar, but he agreed to come down and led a march that, unusually for his campaigns, had elements of violence. There was some looting. There was a lot of police provocation of the protesters who'd started out as peaceful protesters, and in retrospect, it appeared there'd been some involvement from a local black power group called the Invaders, who King had not coordinated with, and he decided to redo this march the right way in coordination with the Invaders, and that's when he came back for the fateful march.
And so, ultimately, were the strikes successful?
It was. King was assassinated in early April 1968. He'd been stalked for weeks, as you know. And once he had been assassinated, there was lots of pressure on the city to do right by these workers, and later in April, the strike was finally resolved, but at what a terrible cost.
Right.
So
then, Ted, what made you want to travel to Memphis and write this story?
Well, it's a sort of, it's one of the handful of landmark episodes in the American civil rights struggle that matter to everybody. But it's bigger than the civil rights struggle. I mean, this is a major episode in American history because of the death of King. And I'd always heard about it and was actually surprised to learn that some of those strikers were not only still alive, but still working in sanitation. That was somewhat astonishing, since they'd be in their late 70s and 80s. And it looked like various of them would be willing to be interviewed, and I could spend time with them. And then, in addition, there was this interesting development. Once I was almost there, it turned out the city of Memphis had voted to compensate the living strikers, not all of them, but many of them, with payments of $50,000, which were then increased by the city council to $70,000, tax-free, as a sort of compensation for what they'd been through. And that really added an interesting element of whether, you know, what money can do to fix these past horrors and past abuse and past exploitation, you know, is how do you decide on the amount of money? Is $70,000 enough money?
Right.
Yeah.
And Ted, what was the reaction of the surviving sanitation workers? Did they feel that was enough compensation for the injury they suffered?
That's a really interesting question. I spoke to probably 9 or 10 of them. None complained. None said, "I'm not taking this money because it doesn't even come close." No, they seemed happy about the money. Most attended a special breakfast that the mayor held at the National Civil Rights Museum, which, as you probably know, was built on the site of the Lorraine Motel where Dr. King was assassinated.
Right.
And they were there with their families, and it was a very happy picture. But then later, yes, I said, "Well, you know, so how do you think about this?" "Oh, I'm happy, and is it enough money?" And then you'd get this pause, and most of them would not say it's enough money. And that was quite fascinating to me.
That it wasn't enough money? Is it that they wanted more money, or was it that the money was beside the point, that they felt that their city, their government, needed to do more psychically, for lack of a better word, to make up for what they went through, what they suffered in the past?
So that's a really interesting question. You don't, you know, these are not men who write long essays considering the pros and cons of these things. They are also not born agitators, you know, who've been carrying a grudge for years. They are committed workers who have put in years and years and years working for their city, and when you talk about it, you sense a little discomfort when it comes to the question of, is this enough? Nobody said to me, $1 million would have been better. They were all, sort of circumspect about that question of what would be enough. No one would put a money figure on it, and I've got to say, especially with the approach of the 50th anniversary, it seems the surviving workers are singled out for an award by somebody or other almost every week. They're in constant demand for public occasions. Everybody wants to celebrate them now, and you know, there are streets named after them. Each of them had his own street where he lived given a second name, named after him by the previous mayor. You know, they're celebrities now, and yet that doesn't translate into money. It only recently did it, and it wasn't until I was out with one elderly man named Elmore Nickelberry, who still has a route. It's not one of the harder routes, but he drives the truck 5 days a week. I joined him, and he said that, well, now maybe I'll be able to retire. And it occurred to me, the reason he was still working was because he couldn't afford to quit. He had opted out of the city's pension plan, like most of his coworkers back in 1968, which turned out to be a terrible choice.
Wow.
And and Social Security just wasn't enough for him to get by. So now that he's got the money, he thinks he'll finally retire. But that's part of the explanation for why they're still working.
Yeah, you're listening to Ted Conover, contributing writer for Smithsonian Magazine, about his piece online. The headline is "The Strike That Brought MLK to Memphis." In the magazine, it is "I Am a Man." Two things, Ted. One, why did the sanitation workers opt out of being a part of the pension? And two, you mentioned earlier that the city voted to give the surviving sanitation workers first $50,000 and $70,000, but I noted that you said not all of the surviving sanitation workers were compensated. So who got left out and why?
Yeah, so if you... Those who stuck with the plan were not eligible for this compensation. I talked to one man in that situation who was sort of financially sophisticated, and he had decided that the pension plan was going to be better for him than Social Security, and so by the rules that described, you know, the group of workers who should be compensated, he didn't fit in. His daughter, he was having trouble speaking when we talked, but his daughter helped me to understand that she was lucky that he was a entrepreneurial kind of guy. He'd started other businesses while he worked in sanitation. They'd done so well that he was able to stop after 25 years. But it felt a little bitter that he wasn't also qualified for the compensation, because he had been part of the strike, had been part of the union.
But he was left out because he opted to go into the pension system.
Yeah, exactly. The workers at the conclusion of the strike in 68 received advice. It's a little bit vague exactly from who. It may have been their union leadership, but the advice to forego the pension plan was advice most of them followed. And so the city of Memphis, to its credit, when they announced these awards, had on hand people from a financial planning firm to advise the families for free about the best ways to invest this money and, you know, to make it last, if that was their desire, as opposed to spending it all at once. I think it was a sort of tacit recognition that the fiduciary duty of whoever had been advising them back in 1968, you know, that was lacking.
And, right.
And so this was a step in the right direction.
Ted, so we're talking about the Memphis sanitation strikes that took place in the spring of 1968, that is 50 years ago this year. How has Memphis changed in the 50 years?
So I am not a Memphis resident, but I talked to lots of people there. It is still a city with profound racial inequality. It's a majority African-American city, I think 63 or 64% African-American. It has a lot of low-paying sort of warehouse-type jobs, jobs that don't offer great paths for advancement. The wages tend to be low. Some things are demonstrably better than during the 1968 strike. A sanitation worker now, for example, is paid $17 or $18 an hour. They get showers after work, which they didn't used to get. They don't have to lug these tubs full of stinking garbage from the back of everybody's house, which they used to have to do. There's now modern hydraulic lifts on the back of their trucks that take the curbside collection things, you know, and save their backs. But overall, the city, you know, inequality lives on, and the poverty there is a poverty of African American people, and there are lots of politically active groups working on various aspects of this, whether it's poor public mm-hmm. transportation or low wages, problems with money bail. There's a whole list of issues trying to bring to the public eye.
Right. Ted Conover. I've been speaking with Ted Conover about his latest article for Smithsonian Magazine called The Strike That Brought MLK to Memphis, also I Am a Man. Ted, thank you.